everybody. This is Steve Louie with the Grower IQ podcast. Today I have Seth Gillum with me from Champlain Valley Dispensary and Southern Vermont Wellness. Hey there, Seth. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. So Seth, can you give us a little background about yourself and Champlain Valley Dispensary and Southern Vermont Wellness?
Sure. We could just call it CVD from here on.
Awesome.
That's good. Short.
That's a little bit easier. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mouthful for sure. So, my background, I started working on my first farm in the year 2000. So I like to say, you know, I've got about 20 years of agriculture, give or take, under my belt. I worked for one of the largest native plant tree nurseries in the Northeast for 6 years here in Vermont, growing trees for watershed and riparian restoration projects throughout Vermont and northern New England. And then about 3 years ago, I started to cast about for something else and want to do something different. So I got a master's degree in sustainable business from the University of Vermont, which really ignited a fire to me for local sustainable agriculture and kind of the future of agriculture. And so I got interested in controlled environment agriculture, which led me to cannabis. So I'm a bit of a cannabis newbie. I've been growing cannabis for a little over 2 years now commercially. And I've been really fortunate to step into this role at CVD, which was Vermont's very first medical cannabis dispensary. We were licensed in 2012, so we're growing on 8 years strong here. And we are the
which largest, is incredible.
It's awesome, just awesome. And we are the yeah. largest medical dispensary in the state of Vermont.
The largest and first, is it?
Yeah, first and largest.
Wow, amazing. Can you tell us a little bit more about CVD?
Sure. So, in most markets, we might not even register. We'd be considered a small craft grower. So when we say we're large, we mean for Vermont, you know, a state of just about 600,000 people. But, we're a mission-driven organization whose main goal is to make sure that our patients have access to quality plant-based medicine that they need for any number of ailments that plague them, and frankly, that contemporary medicine doesn't help them with. So we, first and foremost, we really believe in providing this plant-based medicine and also education. We do a tremendous amount of community outreach and outreach to doctors and healthcare providers to help them understand the benefits of the medical program and medical cannabis to the community at large.
Gotcha. And we talked a little bit last week, and you mentioned how much getting the right medicine, getting good medicine, clean medicine is to get to your patients. How does that translate into the methodologies you've chosen for growing and some of your SOPs?
Well, this is great. Jumping right into it. On the cultivation front, the number one thing is we don't put anything on the plants unless it's absolutely needed. Some dispensaries out there, they might run a spray program. You know, on day one you do this, on day four you do this. We're always adapting and responding to the needs of the plant, and not applying anything to the plant unless the plant is saying, "Hey, I need help here." Because growing cannabis indoor so that you're getting a clean certificate of analysis is hard. You're monocropping in a controlled environment, and it can be difficult.
Right.
So
we're talking about foliar sprays and any treatments you're putting on top of the actual plant.
That's exactly right. Because that's usually first and foremost in people's mind when they start thinking, what's in my cannabis, right? I think it's a three-part thing, right? What's being applied to the plant? What's being fed to the plant, and what's the environment where the plant has been grown. So
right.
On the application front, you know, we don't put anything on the plants that isn't OMRI, or is there OMRI listing in Canada?
I'm not certain. I think I've seen that before, but I don't know if it was in the US or Canada.
Yeah,
can you tell us about it?
It just means organic, right? We are okay. Really big fans of soft chemistry and of using soft chemistries to do things to try and boost the natural immune system of a plant, using biocontrols. versus chemistries that might try to attack and kill a predator or something like that. So,
okay. When you use the word chemistries, are you talking about recipes or certain recipes of chemicals of inputs?
Yeah, I mean, everything, you know, we work in very close concert with the state of Vermont Department of Agriculture. We're not allowed to apply anything to our plants at all that hasn't been approved by them, which means everything we approve has to have an EPA certification label. So we don't ever do any off-label application of anything, either as a food or a foliar feed or as a supplement to the plants. Yep.
Gotcha. Yeah. And how are you growing in at CVD?
We grow in a 70-30 cocoa and perlite mix. We found that particular blend works really well for the hydroponic feed that we give them. Our IPM program is really based upon organic applications and beneficial insects, biocontrols, and our feed program is hydroponic and OMRI listed or organic cocoa. So we're a bit of a hybrid. We're not pure organic because of our mineral salts that we feed the plants, but we also do try hard to cultivate a living matrix with beneficial organisms in our cocoa.
Gotcha. And what led you to that sort of hybrid mix? We talked a little bit about, you know, a lot of people do hydro. A lot of people use soil. How come you decided to go with this hybrid strategy?
Well, the short answer is that it allows us to produce good, consistent cannabis that's still in line with our values and still, we believe, is the safest product out there for our patients. She doesn't have any trouble with me saying this. My mother is a patient at Champlain Valley Dispensary. It actually makes my job really easy because no matter what I do, my question is, you know,
right,
this might be a product that my mother consumes. So am what I'm doing right now, is that the absolute best thing for the plant and for the people using it downstream? But to answer your question, the way we arrived at that was, you know, my background is in agriculture, was really in organic agriculture. I worked on organic farms. The nursery I worked at was an organic nursery. And so it was a bit of a change coming into the world of indoor hydroponics. And I knew that I didn't want to use rock wool. I don't like it as a product. I don't like the way it's manufactured. I don't like the fact that it just ends up in the landfill. But I also knew that you could achieve a level of consistency in an indoor situation with good hydroponic mineral salts that can be extremely challenging when you're growing in at scale with living soil. And so that's kind of how we arrived at that hybrid approach.
Excuse me. Gotcha. Rock wool is one of those things that I think, along with the explosion of the marijuana industry or the medical cannabis industry, has grown along with the industry, even though there seems to be some other more viable, more environmentally friendly options out there for starting plants. You don't use rock wool, right? What do you use instead of that? Is it compressed cocoa then?
No, it's it comes already blended, so it's a 70-30 cocoa perlite blend.
I see.
Yeah.
And how do you start your clones without rock wool?
Oh, well, that's a bit of an issue. So I guess I should say we do use rock wool in that instance if we need to. We also use root riots or the peat. That can be,
right.
that can absolutely be a challenge for sure, because the peat plugs also, you know, there's a supply chain challenge there. Not being new to horticulture, I am familiar with the sort of dirty little secrets of some of our supply chain challenges, you know, the plastic that we use and where a lot of inputs are sourced. So that's something that I
think
industry-wide, as we continue to gain acceptance and as consumers become savvier and smarter, there's going to be a tremendous pressure on growers by consumers to say, What are your inputs? What are you buying? What, you know, what's this been grown in? Where does your water come from? What's it look like coming out of your facility? And so I think it's great that you're asking these questions and keeping me and us others honest about it, because I think that it's really kind of the future of cannabis cultivation.
Right. And last time we talked about it, I was asking, you know, sometimes or the thought is doing something organic or, you know, environmentally responsible can be costly. And so, you know, that sort of privilege, I don't know if that's the right word or not, but that sort of privilege is relegated to the upper end of the market quite often. In almost any industry, like you can see something like that.
Right.
But for you guys, I mean, you guys are, when I asked you if that was how you marketed your products, for you guys, it's not. You're making it available to everybody at a, you know, an average price point, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, it's really part and parcel of my, my education I got during my, doing my sustainable MBA, which was, you know, if your game plan is that you're going to grow organically and charge more, there's a really limited segment of the population that's actually willing to pay more for something that's organically grown. But if you can figure out a way to do something that's as close to possible, close to that as possible, or ideally completely organic, and use that as an opportunity to lower cost or improve yield, then it's a no-brainer, right? So it's a constant evolving process where we're just trying to figure out how to make all of our inputs as green as possible without compromising on quality, compromising on yield, or adding to cost. And that's tricky. But I definitely think, you know, organic's an important shorthand. I think organic cannabis is important that that's an option for consumers, but it can be a shorthand that I don't always think results in a superior process or superior flower.
This podcast is brought to you by GrowerIQ, a compliant cannabis seed-to-sale and cultivation management platform, the first platform to integrate all facility systems like sensors, controls, QMS, and ERP, all into a single interface. GrowerIQ changes the way cultivators use software, transforming a regulatory requirement into a platform to learn, analyze, and improve performance. You mentioned that your background, your education helped you form that strategy and grounded you in the organics. We also talked about others being hired from similar backgrounds as opposed to the guys that were, you know, previously in this market because they had some familiarity, which were the underground guys. But nowadays you're saying you can hire actually, you know, academically trained horticulturalists for your grow. Can you tell us a little bit about how that's changed the operations and how things have improved because of that?
Yeah, and what's amazing is, you know, I consider myself a newbie in the world of commercial cannabis. But you know, cannabis years are like dog years. Like it's just
right.
It's sort of like 10 years ago when the solar energy industry blew up. Like everything is happening and changing so quickly. So even just in the couple years that I've been there, we've moved and transitioned from a workforce which was predominantly you know, traditional market or gray market growers, as we like to refer to them, to a more professionalized workforce. And I think, you know, number one, that's just due to the increased acceptance of cannabis as a viable career path for people with horticultural background. It's something you can do. And I think really where that's benefited us is for everything that they did to really build this industry, and we owe traditional growers a tremendous debt of gratitude. My experience has been that some of those softer skills, teamwork and cooperation, learning how to make sure everyone's following the same processes, regardless of what your individual impulses are. Those things can be challenging for people that have spent a long time, frankly, growing it on their own and growing it in a highly secretive environment. So now we're kind of in this world where we've got people that are talented growers, but they have some of those transferable skills that they might have picked up in another professional setting. And that is helping the industry to mature and helping CBD to grow, you know, really, really, you know, top drawer cannabis with a talented team.
Yeah, no, that's one of the best things I think that is happening to the industry as it grows, is that we're getting a professionalization of the industry, of the folks that are in it. And with that, I mean, comes better operations, but also, it carries everything forward, including the information on this plant, what we know about it. And so previously we're going with a lot of anecdotal information. Nobody was allowed to do any research on it legally. But now, as cannabis industry is getting more mainstream, it seems like we're getting better information. We're getting more information and better quality information. Is that something you're seeing as well?
Yes, definitely. So in the US, it's still a narcotic. So universities are remiss to jeopardize their federal funding by doing research on medical cannabis, but there is increasingly peer-reviewed research on hemp because of hemp is now legal in the United States because of the Farm Bill. And so I'm starting to see more and more good research that, as I'm understanding the physiology of the plant, morphology of the plant, understanding integrated pest management, and especially things that are happening during propagation and the vegetative growth, are very, very beneficial. And speaking of that professionalization of the workforce, increasingly I have a team of growers who's able to say, I read this great bit of research in the recent Cannabis Business Times, which is, good scientific research from North Carolina State, and kind of bringing that to the team and saying, what if we tried doing X? So it's happening. I think full legalization in the U.S. will, among other things, it will unleash a torrent of good university-level research, which is desperately needed.
Right. And we are recording this on Election Day, and it looks like a lot of the ballots for cannabis have gone through, and so hopefully that helps accelerate that change.
Yeah, I mean, it's so universally widespread. Mississippi. Past medical cannabis, which, in the U.S., Mississippi isn't always synonymous with progressive values. But I think this is, I think people have a value of personal choice, and they recognize most voters recognize on some level the wisdom of plants, put it really simply. And that transcends party lines. So I think we're really starting to see a sea change in terms of that behavior.
Yeah, which is excellent to hear. You want to see a modern country like the U.S. Moving towards that, even though they aren't. though that poses a problem because it's not fully legal in the U.S., and that's why I say they aren't yet. The states are moving forward, which is great, but you have countries like Canada, like Israel, that have a legal framework at the top federally, and so are I think the actors there, the industry stakeholders, can move with a bit more freedom and stability. Do you think American companies that are doing the research and other sort of tertiary things for the industry, are they disadvantaged perhaps by that? And are you seeing that? So are you seeing a lot of information, good research, maybe even products coming out of overseas companies?
Yes.
More so than you are?
Especially Israel. I mean, we have Zoom calls with vendors from Israel all the time.
Interesting.
With amazing cutting edge technology. And I can't help but think we're losing market share, the development of a global industry doesn't need to be, a zero-sum game, if there's smart entrepreneurs
right.
in Israel who can market a product and make it work good for them. But it is unfortunate that there are people with entrepreneurial talents in the U.S. who are really not able to put that fully to work. It's a missed opportunity in my mind.
Yeah, me too, especially in those parts of the industry. I think there are parts that the U.S. is way ahead on, and especially on the consumer side. Genetics seems to be one that, the strains that come out of California are quite often globally renowned. Mm-hmm. But those sort of tertiary, more, infrastructure-based industries seem to be losing out a bit to those other countries.
Yeah, and we used to joke when I was farming, the way you make money in agriculture is you sell products to dumb farmers,
Right.
And so
picks and shovels.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's exactly. And so, you know, not to, I'm a cultivator myself, so not to belittle the contributions of growers, but the way you grow an industry is by having a viable supply chain. And I think, you know, it's there's ultimately going to be a limited market and a limited capacity of growers and breeders to supply what's needed. But I think there's always going to be a wonderful opportunity for people on the supply chain end to continue to advance products and services that are out there.
Right, right. And on the supply chain side, where it's plant touching, I mean, having state barriers when you go to trade clones or genetics or something like that must be such a pain in the butt for you.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yep. Right. A very simple answer on that one, because it is.
it's very simple. I mean, we're one of the wisdoms of the Vermont State Legislature, and was why we're lucky at CBD to have a truly dedicated patient base, is they allow patients to gift genetics back to the dispensaries.
And so, oh, interesting.
Yeah. So some of our most successful cultivars have been gifts from patients that say, I've grown this at home. It does wonders for my, you know, insert ailment here. Would you guys like to grow it? And the answer often is, yeah, you know, we'll give that a try. We've got a small space within our production facility, which is dedicated to trialing and bringing new genetics online. And we have a dedicated team that helps work with a tester patients to help them trial and provide good feedback about the genetics that we're putting out there. And so that has really been instrumental to our success. It's been grassroots on that level. And that was one of the smartest things that Vermont did when they created the medical program.
Man, that is amazing. That is so cool. And so, I mean, you've had some success stories out of that, I imagine?
Absolutely. Yeah, hands down.
Yeah, that's really incredible. So a patient that has a strain that has, you know, whatever, that can somehow express the molecules that hit their ailment perfectly, they can get you to grow and replicate.
Yeah, which, and yeah. One of the things that's so wonderful about that is it's easy as a grower to get caught in chasing THC. You know, what's the COA on this product? What's the percent? If it's not more than 20%, is it viable as medicine? And THC is just one part of what the plant offers us. You know, with the terpenes and the, you know, CBD and CBG.
The minor cannabinoids, yeah.
And everyone's endocannabinoid system is different. And so when you have your patients on a grassroots level doing that work and passing along that information to you, it allows you to frame it in a really different way versus, you know, this is a 26% strain, give it a try.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that doesn't tell you a whole lot, except there's a lot of THC. I saw a really interesting study out of Israel where doctors had an autistic child that they were treating with cannabis, and the child had very aggressive outbursts. And so they found success treating it with a certain strain of cannabis, which had, you know, typical THC and CBD numbers. And then they went to replace it because they ran out of it. They went to replace it with something that had the exact same CBD and THC profile, but did not match the rest of it. And when they switched over, they saw the symptoms were not abated anymore, because what they realized was there's some other molecule, some other minor cannabinoid, maybe it was a terpene or something, or a group of them that were interacting in such a way that was alleviating the symptoms. But now moving to this other strain, just having the same THC and CBD, it didn't do it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's why, you know, some people claim that CBD doesn't help them the way it's marketed as doing. And, you know, maybe those people need a particular combination of cannabinoids to get the relief that they're looking for.
Right, right. I mean, just more to the point that we really don't understand the plant just yet.
No.
And more needs to be done. So another question I wanted to ask you was, with COVID, I mean, it's changed everything. How has that changed the SOPs and things you do at your grow?
Right. You know, I'm patting myself on the back here. One of the things that I am extremely proud of is that you can't have a good cultivation facility, and we're a vertically integrated facility. So we also do all of our trimming and all of our extraction, and we have an in-house kitchen with an incredible crew that handcrafts all of our edibles. So we do everything under one roof. And doing that so that there's no cross-contamination, so that the product is remaining clean and safe, is incredibly challenging. I mean, there is a rigorous focus on sanitation and safety. And so COVID hit, and so all these things like using foot baths and making sure that only certain people can go in certain places and wearing, you know, scrubs and sanitizing your hands, it's just stuff that we do all day, every day. So I think, you know, the biggest change was wearing masks. But you know, we when we were working with the state, who was deciding, you know, what businesses are essential and what's not, and do they have the SOPs in place to be able to send their employees safely to work, you know, for them it was like, oh yeah, you guys, this is great. You've already been doing this all along. So I feel really grateful for having all those processes in place. You know, we have a great quality control manager who's really keeps us honest and makes sure that we're everyone's following and doing everything that needs to be done.
Right. Yeah. So I guess the best practices that you put in place to keep germs out are keeping germs out.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that's one of the challenges of running this kind of business is you really have to have those kind of practices in place before you need them. We didn't know there was going to be a global pandemic.
Right.
We just knew that there was some sort of risk out there that we needed to have SOPs to deal with. And that takes time and it takes money and it takes focus and discipline. And I think if you're a small craft grower who wants to break into the market, understanding that and having the resources and the time to do that can be very, very challenging.
Right. Have you had any HR issues because of COVID, people not being able to come to work or, I don't know, being able to distance and all that?
No, we haven't had any issues. You know, we're lucky up here in Vermont where we have been very, very safe and the COVID numbers have been very low. So we haven't had any challenges. You know, any employees that were not essential to day-to-day production have been able to work from home. So I would say, the building feels a little bit emptier at lunchtime. But other than that, no, we really haven't had any HR staffing challenges. If anything, you know, people feel really grateful that they're not at home and they have somewhere to go during the day.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
It's been kind of a blessing for many.
That's very, very cool to hear. So this is the Grower IQ podcast. And so I wanted to ask you at CVD, what kind of grow management software are you using?
Does Microsoft Excel count?
I think it does. And I would venture a guess that you are not alone, and there's quite a few others out there using Excel.
Yeah, Microsoft Excel and whiteboards. And when the two don't sync up, that's where problems start to happen. So, the big picture of that is grow management software is a big investment. Not just financially, but in terms of you really want to have something that's going to align with your processes and your goals. And when you live in a state of uncertainty, Vermont just passed tax and regulate cannabis a month ago. And so we've been in this environment of uncertainty of, are we going to grow? How much are we going to grow? What's the opportunity out there? And kind of in this holding pattern of, you know, what investments do we make strategically as a company? Our focus first and foremost is always on growing good quality cannabis and putting our resources there. So now that there's this opportunity out there to move into a potentially larger market, I think grow management software is going to become critical to our processes and to our ability to function effectively. But we're not there yet. We're just not there yet.
Gotcha. And so the Excel whiteboard stuff that handles it for now. It sounds like once Vermont makes its decision, well, it has, I guess. Once things come into fruition in terms of the rec side, you'll be in the market. And maybe I can ask you when you do get into the market for a grow management software. Is there a feature that you would be looking for in particular? Something that, you'd would really help in the management of the grow?
That is a really, really good question. This is perhaps not the most earth-shattering answer, but, you know, commercial cannabis cultivation, there's a million variables. It's so hard to point one finger towards what causes success and what causes failure, what produces a certain yield or a certain outcome. And, I think that's the thing where having years of experience in the same grow, you know, I'm getting into my third year now, and I feel like I'm just starting to get my feet underneath me. So I think a good software package would take all those separate pieces of information, integrate, you know, yield with variations in climate, with terpene profile, because right now it's you're really looking through all these different reports and looking back on these schedules, and then there'd be some way of reporting that to you in real time, so you can anticipate how a crop is going to perform, rather than always looking back and then trying to kind of reframe that and, you know, in your own mind looking forward. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does. And so that's really interesting. You would love to see real time. Sort of stats on the grow. That's really interesting. And there, one of the things that I've heard as well is similar. Like some folks want to focus on certain things, so they want to have real time grow number, grow data coming at them. Some people want to have integration with their quality processes and documentation, etc. And there's a few packages out there, it seems, that kind of integrate all those things. So I think you have some choices out there.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So Seth, thank you so much for being here today. That brings us to the end of our time. Best of luck for when you guys make the move into a bigger rec space. And hopefully we chat again when you go to change that software.
Great. Thanks so much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
No problem. Take it easy, Seth. And again, thanks a lot.
Okay, be well.